So, Jack. Oh, Buddy Anderson's here, too. That's right. Yeah. Jack, how much, we just heard Jim talk about improvements you've made on the airplanes. How similar is the inner workings are these airplanes to the P-51 Mustangs that Bud and his colleagues flew in Europe?
I guess in wartime, Bud would have to speak to this, but I think most of the airplanes only went a few hundred hours, and they got it so tattered or much war damage, they got replaced with new airplanes. A lot of from what I understand, a lot of the airplanes never even got an engine change. But most of the engines were on and off an airplane in a few hundred hours at the outside. And some of them that we reworked today, we've got an inventory, we've got stamping numbers when they went through military repair. And they show that they were in, by 400 hours, typically, they've been through repair twice. Well, that's not enough service time for a civilian airplane to be used today. So we've kited the lower end, the time on the bottom end, the bearings and the wheel case and all the mechanisms that drive everything for 1,000 hours. And we think they're probably good for 1,500, but we're not recommending that yet. We service the top end in 500 hours. So we've extended the life of them a lot. Some of that has to do with not using them as hard as they were used in combat. But a lot of it has to do with also with coatings and with improved oil and some other things. But we've worked with through the engine. If we find a problematic part, we try to address that and put some new science and technology to it to try and make it better.
You know, in the film, we heard about World War II and how devastating it was, and almost astounding to think about the number of people who died, the number who were lost to other purposes as well, so that we could be here today and we can still live in a free country. But the losses were gigantic, Jack. How do you think about that?
From D-Day until the Japanese capitulated in 45, there was, in 41 to 45, there was 170 airplanes a day that were lost. 7 days a week, 170 airplanes crashed, I would guess 40% of them were lost in training and 60% were lost in actual theater. But that translates back, in my math, to 220 airmen a day that were lost their lives in these airplanes. And so the impact on today's population and the gene pools that survived, it diminished significantly by the victims of the people who tragically lost their lives in airplanes in World War II.
Yeah, Bud, when you hear the numbers that we said earlier and Jack just mentioned, when you're flying, not every day, but almost every day, what kind of numbers of airplanes had to go up in the air in these raids over Germany that would allow us to believe those kind of numbers of people lost and planes lost?
Well, they were tremendous. They're kind of incomprehensible in today's terms. But we flew daily with raids of 1,000 bombers, or 800 to 1,000 bombers, and equal number of fighters to go with them. It was tremendous to see an armada of these airplanes flying through against the cumulus crowds, and the line went as far as you could see. They were about in little three-ship Vs, and then they'd get about 60 of them, and 60 more, far as you could see, bombers. And when they were making contrails, they were particularly impressive. And then you had the fighters going with them, and it was a pretty majestic show. And while we were talking about casualties, the 8th Air Force, one of 17 air forces that they had during World War II, suffered the most tremendous losses of any of the air forces, and in fact had more people were killed in the 8th Air Force than they were in the Marine Corps for the entire time of the war. And people don't realize that. You know, they think of the Air Corps, oh, that's a country club for the war. But 8th Air Force over Europe was the most dangerous place to be.
Speaking of 8th Air Force, when Jimmy Doolittle took over as commander of 8th Air Force, what changed in terms of the war?
Oh, it just... Well, let me put it to you this way. There was two significant things that happened. The arrival of the Mustang in Europe, so it could escort the B-17s wherever they wanted to go. And Jimmy Doolittle, who took over the 8th Fighter, 8th Air Force, when we arrived over there, our orders from 8th Air Force was to stay with the bombers. You had to be with them. They wanted you around them. They wanted to see you. And when the enemy came in, we were supposed to drive them away and then come back. You could go to 18,000 feet, and if you hadn't shot the guy down, you had to knock it off, come back up. Well, that wasn't the way to defeat the Luftwaffe, as we found out. We weren't doing a real good job about it. The classic way to do it was to have the bombers go in, blow up the factories and the airfields and the airplanes on the ground and all these resources, fuel, oil, and stuff like that. But that wasn't working in late 1943. Matter of fact, they had a stand down. The losses were so high, the Luftwaffe was destroying the B-17s and the B-24s at such a rate that it was not, you know, we couldn't stand that kind of loss rate. So they said, well, we gotta have these Mustangs. And they had some in the 9th Air Force. The first, the 354th Fighter Group, great outfit, was there in the 9th Air Force waiting for the invasion, and then they were going to do ground support. So they said, let's try them. And they were so wildly successful that the 8th Air Force demanded that they get P-51s. We were the next unit to be equipped, and so we were transferred to the 8th Air Force before we even flew combat.
So Doolittle, you were supposed to go back and stay with the bombers.
Yeah.
Doolittle changed that. So what did he do?
So Doolittle, the impact of Jimmy Doolittle was... he changed that policy, and he said, well, it's in his book. You read his book, and he went down to the 8th Fighter Command, and there was some kind of a thing over the door. It said, the mission of the 8th Fighter Command is to bring the bombers back safely. He said, who put that up there? General Kepner says, I don't know, there when I got here. He says, well, take it down. He says, the mission of the 8th Fighter Command is to destroy the Luftwaffe. And he removed that restriction on us. And he said, from now on, when you fighter pilots engage the enemy, you take them to the ground and kill them. And it was called Pursue and Destroy. And it's how we defeated the Luftwaffe. The Luftwaffe had to be defeated before we could invade the continent. And so how it was done is we actually killed their experienced pilots. They ran out of pilots.
Thank you.
They had plenty of airplanes. So they didn't have pilots. And that made the bombing easier. And so it was a big combined effort. But those two things made a significant impact on the war in Europe.